What's that thing? I don't know. Coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your callers from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But hold your calls for a few minutes. We're trying to get on the line, Joel Rosenberg. But if we can't get Joel Rosenberg, we'll go right directly to Ralph Efferson, who's to be our guest for the second hour. Ralph is always a very, really one of my favorite guests, a man I've known personally for the better part of 20 years now, probably a little over that, a man who's been part of this struggle for preserving our freedom for, I guess, about as long as I have. I think he got started back in the 1960s when I did, and we've sort of grown old together. Well, we had hoped to have, for the first hour this evening, Joel Rosenberg, who's written a wonderful book entitled The Last Days, and it is the story of what's going on in the Middle East from a fictional point of view, but it begins with the assassination of Yasser Arafat and the civil war that develops there, a fast-moving adventure novel, but it has many, many redeeming qualities in it, in that it gives a salvation message, it gives the prophetic message why some people would believe these are the last days. Woven into this wonderful story, and I will tell you, I don't usually like to read novels. I don't want to waste my time. I read this one because I was intrigued by it, and I will have to tell you, after the first page, he had me hooked. I read it through. It was down to number 11 on the New York Times bestseller list about a week ago, and we had Joel on one of our other programs. And I regretfully don't seem to be able to be getting him on the program this evening. Maybe we can get him on a different time. So I think with that thought, why we're going to see if we can't get Joel Rosen, pardon me, it's Epperson, Ralph Epperson, who's written several very, very important books. One of them is The Hidden Hand. Another is the book on the New World Order, which he wrote even before George Bush came out and announced there on September 11th the year. I guess it was near 1990 that we would have a new world order. Why, of course, Ralph Epperson, because of his knowledge of the occult and the Masonic influence and the writings of the occultists, wrote a book entitled The New World Order, which we do carry. We carry both The Hidden Hand and The New World Order here at Radio Liberty. Ralph has a wonderful book he's written, which you actually can get for nothing. It's a book review of Morals and Dogma, and we'll be talking a little bit more about that in a few minutes, because this is a very, very important book. It's a book that will help you to understand what is in the morals and dogma of the Masons. It is the sort of the Bible of the Masons. It was given to every Mason up until about 1974, and by that time most people in America had been so dumbed down they couldn't possibly understand morals and dogma. It's difficult reading. So Ralph has actually done a book review of that book, Morals and Dogma, and taken all the salient points from that and a number of other Masonic writings and put them together in a syllabus, which he actually ships out to you for nothing. So the price is right, and I hope that many of you, if you don't already have a copy of Ralph Everson's book review of Morals and Dogma, will want to get one. If we get him on the line, why, we'll get you his telephone number. But to understand anything going on today, you have to understand the Masonic influence at every aspect, every level of our government. For instance, do you know that Washington, D.C. is laid out by astrology, the whole layout of Washington, D.C. is a cult. In fact, we carry a book called The Occult Architecture of the Nation's Capital, and this was laid out in early 1800s. How would you conceal that from the American people? Very simply, you control the media here. And it's been well known by occultists who sort of laugh at the stupidity of the average American, that they don't recognize their symbols and signs that they have everywhere about us. They hide their symbols in plain sight on the back of the dollar bill, on your television screen. When you tune into CBS, you see that eye down in the right lower quadrant. That's an occult symbol that's thousands of years old. If you read Manly P. Hall's book, The Secrets of All Ages, the secret writings of all ages, and really this is a classic, he tells you that down through the ages, the occultists, and there have always been occultists and disciples of the mystery religions and secret societies, have always hid their symbols in wood carvings, in architecture, in paintings. They always hide them in plain sight, but unless you understand what's going on, you won't be able to recognize them at all. And down through the ages, why, they of course dominated the nations, they've controlled the kings, they have killed their enemies, and they've been able to get away with this very efficiently, because anybody who talks about conspiracies is immediately laughed at and ridiculed. Why, conspiracy? Why, you probably believe there was a black helicopter, or there's a communist under every bed, or, you know, and, well, if you control the media, you can pretty well control what people think. And so these people have infiltrated our media, they've infiltrated our politics, they teach in our universities, but they're bound together by secret oaths. Horrible, horrible oaths. In fact, no Mason who is above a certain degree would ever vote to, if he was a judge or a member of a jury, would ever vote to convict a fellow Mason, even if he was guilty of treason or murder, because he's sworn an oath not to. And these oaths really are frightening. And if you've ever talked to Masons who've taken them, even though they've renounced them, they still fear them. Because when they first enter the lodge, when they're becoming a master Mason, the first 3 degrees of the Blue Lodge, they ask for, well, the light to come in. They're asked by the Grand Master of the Lodge, what do you want? And they're told to answer the light. Well, they don't know what the light is. They think that has to do with illumination, or in the Bible they talk about Christ being the light of the world. And so they say the light because they're told to say the light. What they do not understand is that they're asking for Lucifer to come into their life. And at that point, just as if you were to ask, you know, personally on your knees and in sincerity for Jesus to come into your life, and if you are really sincere, he will come in and change your life, and you'll have the indwelling of the Holy Spirit. So with a Mason kneeling with his chest bared, a noose around his neck, blindfolded, his pants leg rolled up, I believe it's on the left side. You know, he's there. He's asking for the light to come into his life. And there is a transformation. And unless he renounces those oaths, why, he is owned by Lucifer. And if you haven't read my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, you really need to, because we give you the oaths that the people take as they go through the first three levels of masonry. And unfortunately, many, many people, good people, people who honestly believe they're Christians, actually are indwelt by a demonic spirit, which they don't even recognize. Most Masons are good people. Most of them are there because they want to do good. But they do not understand the significance of the oath they've taken. And you really need, of course, to study Masonry. You need to read the writings of Manly P. Hall, who, when he died, was cited by the Scottish Rite magazine as the greatest Masonic philosopher of all time. And what did Manly P. Hall write? Well, if you get his book, Lectures in Ancient Philosophy, and all of these books are still available. If you're interested, we can tell you where to get them. But in the Lectures on Ancient Philosophy, Manly P. Hall writes that Masonry is a fraternity within a fraternity, an outer fraternity made up of men that want to have a good time. They want to do good. They have business contacts. It's a fun thing to be a Mason. But there's an inner fraternity, and that is of those who study the Arcanum and the Ancanorum. And what is that? Well, that is the secret and the secret of secrets. You can look it up in the dictionary, as I had to. I'd never heard the phrases before. But then these people love to use words that nobody can really quite understand. And what is the secret? The secret, ladies and gentlemen, is that their God is not the God of the Bible, but Lucifer. Because, you see, the God of the Bible has all sorts of restrictions on what you can do. The God of the Bible says, thou shalt not commit adultery, and that means you shouldn't be fornicating. And that's a killjoy. He doesn't want you to enjoy yourself. Thou shalt not lie, and thou shalt not steal, and thou shalt not commit murder, and all of these restrictions. But the devil, Lucifer, gives you absolute freedom. You become the ultimate determinant of what you want to do. And as Aleister Crowley had said so well, do what thou wilt. That is the whole of the law. And for those of you who don't know who Crowley was, you need to get our 4-tape set on Aleister Crowley. But he was a Satanist. He was a 33rd degree Mason for 12 years before he was recruited to go to the higher levels of Masonry and here in the rites of Memphis and Mithraeum and the Palladian rites, while he was introduced to Satanism and Illuminism and the Illuminati. And he was part of this. And you read his memoirs, he will tell you all about this. And, of course, he was believed in human sacrifice. And he was known as the most evil man in the world. And his number was 666. Good evening, Ralph. How are you tonight?
I'm doing fine, Dr. Stan. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I appreciate you coming on a little bit early, but our regularly scheduled guest wasn't available, so I figured you'd be willing to come on. We don't have any difficulty talking for 1 hour, 2 hours,
no,
three or four hours.
Wrong. Well, I want you to know, Dr. Stan, you're lucky, because if you'd called an hour earlier, I couldn't have done it because the University of Arizona basketball team was playing a game, and, boy, I don't want to miss that. So
right. I mean, first things first.
They just finished the game, so I was watching the wrap-up. So Arizona won, so now it's okay. You and I can talk.
All right, fine. Well, I've been telling the listeners a little bit about your book review of Morals and Dogma, which you actually give away for nothing. How do you manage to do that? Do you just give away enough of them and you sort of make it up in volume?
That's the answer, Dr. Stanley. Make it up in volume. It's a labor of love. I'm trying to get people aware of the Masons and what they're up to, and just the best way I know how to do it.
Well,
I think it's having an effect nationally.
I really think it is, too. In fact, a lot of people are not going into the Masons, and the Masons are losing a lot of their membership, but unfortunately their people are planted at the highest levels of our government and in our universities. And, well, for instance, we saw the effort on the part of the 10 people, the House leaders, to impeach Bill Clinton. There were 10 congressmen who laid their professions, their jobs on the line, 10 congressmen who said, we think Bill Clinton ought to be impeached, and they sold the House of Representatives on that. And they had a good case against him for obstruction of justice and suborning perjury, and maybe there were a lot of other things they should have gone after him for besides the Monica Lewinsky. And really wasn't Monica Lewinsky. It was his effort to cover that up and to get people to lie and deceive and blocking efforts to get to the truth. But when, of course, they went to the Senate and met with Trent Lott, a 33rd degree Mason, there was no way that anything was going to happen, because Bill Clinton was the highest-ranking demolay in the country, and the demolays are the organization for the Sons of Masons. And so there was no way that a 33rd degree Mason was going to have the highest ranking de Molay in the United States impeached. And so Trent Lott told them, well, you can forget about it. We're not going to impeach the president. You don't have 3 months to present your case. You got 3 days, three witnesses, and we're not going to impeach him. And one man, because he was a Mason, and of course he was the speaker, he was the head of the United States Senate at the time, was able to block the best efforts of all of those congressmen to accomplish something and to bring a man who I believe was a criminal to justice. It wasn't simply because of Monica Lewinsky. I mean, his real crimes were the death of Vince Foster and the death of Ron Brown and the death of about 50 or 60 people who had, knew something about Bill Clinton's activities. In fact, you remember that Linda Tripp left a list of all the people associated with Bill who died under mysterious circumstances on Linda Tripp's chair at her office and said, "Do you really want to testify against this man in public?" Lewinsky knew that he was associated with the murder of a large number of people. I mean, there was Chinagate, and there was Travelgate, and there was Whitewatergate, and the fact that McDougal, who was going to turn state's evidence and testify against Bill Clinton, died mysteriously in prison. I mean, there are just so many things there. But they didn't go after any of those. The only thing they were going after was Lewinsky, and they could have gotten him on that, had it not been for the Masonic connection. And unless the American people understand the Masonic connection, they can't understand anything going on in America today, can they, Ralph?
That's correct. I say that all the time, Dr. Stan, that the key to this whole thing is understanding, the key to this nation is understanding the Masonic Lodge's involvement in it, going all the way back to the foundation of this nation. By the way, there's one more name we've got to add to that list as a possible Clinton connection, and that is the death of John Kennedy Jr. Did you see the Parade magazine article about 2 or 3 months ago?
No, I don't know. I've heard all sorts of rumors about it. In fact, apparently he had, a landing strip in sight. We're told, he was disoriented, didn't have any instruments, and but he was coming in. It radioed. He could see the field, and then suddenly his plane plunges into the ocean there. Now, there's something very strange about the story, but I really can't verify it. I just have that same uneasy feeling. Tell me about the Parade magazine article.
The Parade magazine article said that he wanted to run for the Senate seat.
Oh, that would have been running against Hillary?
Yes. If that Senate seat had been promised to Hillary, John Kennedy Jr. became expendable.
Well, I would not put anything past that group. As we know, there were witches' coven meetings when Hillary was in the White House. You remember, she had actually asked Gene Houston to come to the White House to conjure up the spirits of Gene Houston, of Eleanor Roosevelt and Mohandas Gandhi, and everybody thought that was funny.
Funny.
You know, we're going to have somebody conjuring up spirits in the White House. Ladies and gentlemen, I have a friend of mine, a very reliable investigative reporter, who had all the information about the coven meetings in the White House and was told, if you write that article, why, you're a dead woman. And so she, because she had a daughter and a dependence, why, she did not write the article. But you're dealing with ruthless people. And this is what the American people don't understand. There is evil at the highest levels of our government, and believe me, it's bipartisan, not just Democrats. It's both political parties controlled by people very closely affiliated with the true prince of this world.
Yeah. But there's one more thing that's really, really mind-boggling in that article. The article quotes Teddy Kennedy as urging John Jr. to run for the presidency. Now, if anyone knows why his three brothers were killed, who wanted to run for the presidency, it would be Teddy. And he knows that's a certain death warrant. So what does that say? Does that say Teddy Kennedy's mind is so blown with drugs, and not drugs maybe, but alcohol, that he doesn't reason sanely anymore? That would be, three of his brothers all wanted to run for the president. They're all dead.
Well, not his brothers. John was his nephew.
I know, but even so.
Sure.
He's related. He's a Kennedy, and he could continue the line. And even Teddy himself, his airplane crashed, and his pilot was killed, and Teddy broke his back. So he got the message. Don't run for the presidency. You're nobody. You can run. You can be a senator as long as you want, as long as you vote for us when we want you to vote for us. But don't ever run for the presidency. So Teddy knows. And then he recommends his nephew run for the presidency. Is the man insane?
Well, maybe.
That doesn't make sense.
I can't comment on that, but all I can say is there are a lot of strange things that happen, and maybe there was something to the death of John Kennedy Jr. Maybe there wasn't. But we know there are an awful lot of people who have died under very mysterious circumstances. Certainly President Kennedy was not killed by the magic bullet that went through President, and went through Governor Connally and left debris in on both Governor Connally's right wrist and left thigh, and then magically reconstituted itself and took back all those metal fragments from out of no place and was in pristine condition on the gurney next to Governor Connally in the emergency room at Parkland Hospital. We'll be right back with Ralph. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest today is Ralph Epperson. We're talking about the influence of Masonry on the United States. We're talking about the fact that they hide their symbols, and of course it's not just Masonry. Masonry is simply one of the many manifestations of the mystery religions. It's certainly one of the most powerful and important ones here in the United States, but not the only part of the mystery religions, which have been around since antiquity. And if you read Morals and Dogma by
Albert Pike.
Albert Pike. Read Morals and Dogma by Albert Pike. He will tell you that this is simply a continuation of the mystery religions of antiquity, the modern-day manifestations of that. But these people, of course, are in every aspect of our society. There is not a major city in the United States that does not have a metaphysical bookstore where books dealing with Masonry and Theosophy and Satanism and witchcraft are not sold in large numbers. In fact, you'll find more people in those bookstores than you will in the Christian bookstores. And the fact that most Christians don't understand that simply reflects the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. So, Ralph, how are we going to get the people to understand that there is this other world, this other force within a society that most people are totally unaware of?
Well, that's the problem, Dr. Stan, and I'm sure you admit it's the same problem you've got trying to get people to listen to your radio programs. I don't know the answer, except we just try. You have to try. We are doing all that we can to get the people to understand what's going on and why it's been going on. And as I said before, you cannot understand American history without discovering the role of the Masons in this nation.
Well, I was telling our listeners before you came on about the occult architecture of the nation's capital. Would you like to discuss that?
Well, all I know is a little bit about the... I've read a book on the design of many of the buildings. That doesn't disturb me as much as the fact that when George Washington decided to lay out the Washington, D.C., he hired a Mason who was on his staff, a major, Pierre Charles L'Enfant, and he laid out the city. I've got a copy of the original map, and it's full of squares and compasses. And when you find out where he put them around the White House, he put them around the Capitol building.
All of these are Masonic symbols, and the entire architecture of our nation's capital is laid out in that way. And the Grand Promenade that comes down from the White House all the way down to the Washington Memorial is laid out. You can actually see the Masonic apron lay there. But if you don't know what you're looking for, you're not going to see it. Once somebody points it out to you, why, it's as plain as the nose on your face, but everything is hidden in plain sight. The book, The Occult Architecture of Our Nation's Capital, published of all people places by HarperCollins, gives you an excellent insight into the background of the laying out of our nation's capital. So if this is true, why doesn't anybody know about it? Why, because you're not supposed to. You're supposed to think that the conflict was between communism and capitalism, or between terrorism and democracy. You're supposed to imagine that this is what the battle is, and this isn't a battle at all. That is the mirage that has been created, the smoke and mirrors that has been created, the effort to divert people away from understanding what the true conflict is really all about. And that's the spiritual battle behind everything going on today. What would you say to that, Ralph?
I would agree with you, Dr. Stan. That's exactly the truth. While we're talking about the Kennedys, as you know, within a matter of days or so, it's going to be
You're going to have to hold that thought for just a minute, and we'll be right back as we welcome our visitors back. Okay, Dr. Stan here. Our guest is Ralph Epperson. And, Ralph, you were talking about the Kennedys. Why don't you pick up that thought?
Yeah, let's do that. Did you see the movie JFK, Dr. Stan?
Let's see. That was Oliver Stone, sure.
Yes, right. You saw the movie?
Right.
Did you see the subtle hints that the Masons were involved?
No, I don't think that I did. I don't even know if I was aware of that when I saw the movie. That was so many years ago.
I mean, let me tell you, if I may, just give you what I saw. You might remember that Garrison, portrayed by Kevin Costner, goes to Washington, D.C., to meet with a Colonel X, who is anonymous in the movie.
He's played by David Sutherland, of course. Yes. They said that he sits there on the bench. But we actually have an interview with the real Colonel X. That was, of course, Colonel Fletcher Prouty.
Yes, that's correct. Now, that you might remember that the way that the scene starts is... Kevin Costner, I'll use the name of, well, let's do it. Garrison is walking down the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. And then as he comes down, stage right comes Colonel X. And then they march down the steps, and as they do, Stone pans up to the Washington Monument. And then as they go out to the bench, he pans up to the Washington Monument. And then as they sit down, he shows you the bench they're sitting on is where it is in relationship to the Washington Monument. And then after Colonel X finishes the discussion, Colonel X walks off towards the Washington Monument. And I think what Stone was saying was, listen, there is a connection between the assassinations of Lincoln and John Kennedy, and that connection is the Masonic Lodge.
Well, have you ever tried to contact Stone? Because I don't know that he was that knowledgeable. Maybe you're absolutely right, or maybe it was the cameraman who did that.
No, Stone would not have allowed that to be. Stone's the director. He's the one that says what is going to be shown in a movie, not the cameraman.
Well, maybe he did understand the Masonic connection. Actually, three of the seven members of the Warren Commission were Masons. J. Edgar Hoover, who covered this whole thing up, he knew what had happened. He had the entire FBI, the facilities of the FBI to investigate. He was a 33rd degree Mason. In fact, one reason we have so much trouble with the FBI is it was packed with Masons, and many of them were homosexuals as well, and that is the hierarchy of FBI. It has been the legacy that 33rd degree Mason J. Edgar Hoover left us. And I, you know, most people, when I was first getting involved, J. Edgar Hoover was my hero. He was a man who could do no wrong. And yet, if you read the secret history of the FBI, or if you listen to our tape interviews with Madeline Duncan Brown, who knew Hoover very well, she was actually Lyndon Johnson's mistress, she will tell you that everybody knew he was a homosexual. And, of course, everybody knew that he was involved with the Kennedy assassination. And, of course, the Masons go deeply into the CIA as well as the FBI.
But let's talk about how the Masons might have been involved. He noticed that John Kennedy was killed on November the 22nd. Agreed?
Right.
November is the 11th month plus 22 equals 33.
But are we reaching when we do something?
Oh, no.
Like that?
Let me finish, Dr. Stan.
Okay,
please hear me out. I don't make these charges without evidence. Think about this. It was November the 22nd, 1307, when the Masons, with the Catholic Church, they started the persecution of the Knights Templar. And later on, as you know, they burned Jacques de Molay at the stake in front of Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris, France.
Well, he was actually arrested on October the 13th, Friday, October the 13th of 1307. That was when he was arrested.
That's correct. But November 22nd was the day the persecution started. So there's another 33. Secondly, the town of Dallas is underneath the 33rd degree northern latitude. And the reason that's significant is because the Masons formed their first 33rd degree council in Charleston, South Carolina, underneath the 33rd degree northern latitude. And Charleston, South Carolina, was the scene of the first battle of the Civil War. Isn't that an interesting coincidence? The Confederate flag had 13 stars on it, but only 11 states seceded. And as you know, 13 is the magic number for the Masons. So is it possible that they're admitting that, by the way, you cannot say they were waiting for two more states to secede to join them, because the flag was not adopted until 1863, at the midway point of the war.
All right, well, we're going to have to just interrupt you there, and we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty and we'll invite your calls at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills over beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news. And right now, reminding all of our listeners that we're having a conference. It's going to be at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course on the 29th of November. That's a week from this coming Saturday. That's 2 days after Thanksgiving. And we're going to bring in speakers from across the country, some local and some from Southern California. You're going to find a fascinating, fascinating discussion on what is really in the USA Patriot Act. You'll find a fascinating discussion on what is going to happening, or what is happening with the churches today, because the churches have been infiltrated with a new philosophy. Robert Schuller is a man who believes that we should never tell anyone they're a sinner. Robert Schuller preaches a different type of gospel, and he has several disciples. One of them is a man named Rick Warren. Another gentleman is up there in Illinois, William Heibel, and they put together something called the Church Growth Movement. And then, of course, they have 4,000 evangelical churches, went through the 40 days of purpose, teaching people of the really, why are we here? What is our purpose of life? And then, of course, they brought into the church, but the gospel begins to change. It begins to change, and the very nature of God begins to change. And you'll be amazed at the origin of this program that has gripped the evangelical church today. And I personally believe there's a great apostasy spreading across our nation through the churches. You won't want to miss Dr. Robert Klenk's dissertation on the apostate church. Now, we do have a 2-hour and 20-minute video of that if you're not going to be able to make the conference, and you want to get that by calling 1-800-544-8927. But I hope you can come and hear Dr. Klenk in person, because I will have to admit I had learned a great deal from hearing his discussion of what is happening in the Christian church. And then we'll be having Brad Dacus there talking about Christian persecution. He's from the Pacific Justice Institute. Bill Sardi will be there. I'll be talking about the Iraq, the untold story, why we are really at war with Iraq. And then we'll be talking about why the Supreme Court took God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools. Everybody knows they did, but nobody will tell you why. And we'll tell you why. That's why we hope you can come to the conference all day long, and we're going to be serving lunch. But you're going to have to make your reservations. We have to know how many people are coming by Monday. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is at war. America, our values, our future are under attack today. Well, Dr. Stan here, and our guest is Ralph Epperson, and of course, Ralph has some views as to why he believes there are symbols or information out there pointing to the Masons. Well, he may be right. I can only say that my concern about the Masonic involvement was that at least three of the men who served on the Warren Commission were Masons. Isn't it interesting? Out of the entire nation, they had to get three Masons. Of course, three of them came from the Council on Foreign Relations as well. And, of course, the Council on Foreign Relations came out of Masonry. the man who created the Secret Society, which became the Round Table, which became the CFR, was Cecil John Rhodes, and both he and his close associate, Lord Milner, were Masons, and it's sworn the secret oaths that every Mason does when he enters the Brotherhood. So we begin to see this whole thing again tying together, and you say, well, you're really reaching. Well, there is no question in my mind of the story we've been told about the assassination of John Kennedy. It just is not true. There's no way Lee Harvey Oswald, who couldn't even hit General Walker standing right outside a window where he was seated in a chair, would be able to get off three shots so quickly and two of them hit the president, especially when it's very obvious that one of them came from in front and Lee Harvey Oswald was behind. But it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough and you control the media, why, you can get most people to agree. Well, we'll be with you right back to Ralph here. Ralph, why don't you pick up from there?
Well,
if you have any thoughts.
Let me throw some more things at you to make that you understand this.
Okay, let's just a minute. We've got somebody calling in here. Let's just see. Oh, who do we have on the line?
Hi, Dr. Stan.
Who's this?
This is Ed.
Hi, Ed. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I had a question for Ralph. I was wondering, Mr. Epperson, could you explain as to the connection with the secret societies and the Civil War?
Well, I believe that the war was planned in 1837 at the request of the bankers who did not get the Second National Bank that they wanted after the 1816 to 1836 period. They had a charter for 20 years and it lapsed. So they decided to plan another war to get the North into a position of creating the Union to create a central bank. So they had to have a war, and the only way they could do it was rather than during the American Revolution, they learned that it would be almost impossible to feed an army if they sent French or English troops over to the United States to fight a war over a 3,000-mile ocean with America's growing sea power. So they had to get some reason to get Americans to fight Americans, so they used slavery. But that was not the reason for the war. The war was to create a central bank after the Second Bank of the United States failed, after they would not renew it. So the secret society that was formed was called the Knights of the Golden Circle, and that group came to the United States, 14,000 members. Jefferson Davis was a member. John Wilkes Booth was a member. Jesse James was a member. People like this, powerful people, influential people. Then that group later on, with the help of the Masons, created the Ku Klux Klan after the war was over to start a second civil war that never came about. And I believe the reason was because the American people just been fed up. Maybe for some reason they actually understood what was happening to them.
Well, we have the apparent causes for the Civil War. The first, the real cause, at least it was put forward at that time, this had to do with the tariffs and the oppression of the South by the Northern segment, and they had to pay exorbitant prices for their manufactured goods. They couldn't buy them from overseas at a much reduced price. And then, of course, there was by 1863, there was so much opposition to the war in the North that Abraham Lincoln had to, say, well, this has to do with slavery. So that's when he issued the Emancipation Proclamation. He didn't issue that back in, 1860 or 1861 or 1862. He waited until they were well into the war. They had to have an excuse for the war to rally people behind it. So he said, it's all about slavery, the Emancipation Proclamation. And he freed all the slaves in the South, which he couldn't do because they were not under his control, but he left the slaves in the North in bondage. So this really had nothing to do with slavery. But behind everything that goes on in the world, as Ralph said, there are secret societies, and most people have never heard of the Knights of the Golden Circle. And yet it was a very powerful organization at that time. If you get old history books, you'll find about it. It's been totally deleted for modern history books. Who deleted it and why? And that's because they don't want you to understand the occult significance of so much of what's gone on.
Dr. Stan, the reason he issued the Emancipation Proclamation was to get the support of the Russian people so they would send their fleet, allow the Tsar to send their fleet to American waters. And when the Tsar of Russia, which had no central bank, joined the fray, England and France canceled orders to ruin the blockade. They were building blockade-running ships. I've got pictures about Matthew Brady of Russian ships in northern ports during 1863. What were they doing there? I've got a proclamation issued by the city of Baltimore welcoming the Russian fleet to the north. Why? What was the deal? The Russian admirals were given orders by their czar to be opened only after they were at sea, that they were there, those ships were to take orders only from Abraham Lincoln, and that they were free if they saw an American ship attacked. They were under orders to attack back and destroy the originator.
Now, of course, these would be the South that would be doing that, or it would be either the British or the French, who were, of course, backing the South against the North.
Yes.
Okay, let's go to anything else you want to say before we go to the next caller?
No, go ahead.
Let's go to John in Spokane. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing pretty well. For the guest, Ralph, I had a question. Going the world's largest retailer lately, and when you do, take note of the logo that you're using. It's Wall Lone Star Mart. And is there any possibility that that's beyond mere coincidence that Hillary Clinton sits on the board of directors?
I simply don't know. I've never looked into that. How interesting.
I can't comment on it either, John. I haven't noticed it. They have their symbols every place, whether that's one or whether that's just a coincidence. We'll have to wait and see.
All right. Anything else,
John?
That's it.
Thanks so much.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Let me finish with this Russian fleet, Dr. Stead, if you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
The Russian fleet, that thing saved the North, because without it, the South would have more than likely won. And if the South did win the Civil War, they had not joined a union. They formed a confederation, which is far looser. So that means that after the war was over, if they had won, each of those 11 states would have been independent nation states. And then we could have had the Bank of Georgia fighting the Bank of South Carolina, and the Bank of South Carolina fighting the Bank of North Carolina and Kentucky, and then the Florida, Bank of Florida, fighting whatever. We could have had the same situation that had occurred in Europe for all those years, because all of those nations in Europe have central banks. And that's what they wanted out of this thing, was to have the South, if they did win the war, to create separate nation states that would have their own central private bank. Now let me finish. After the Russian fleet had been allowed to come here to save the North, we bought Alaska as a way of transferring money to pay for it.
Seward's Folly, huh?
They call it Seward's Folly, but it wasn't at all.
That was really a good buy for $6 million.
The only way we can send money to a foreign nation is in the buying of land. Foreign aid is not constitutional. And it wasn't constitutional back then either. The only way they could do it would be to buy some worthless land. So we did. We bought what we considered to be Alaska. So we bought it as a way to pay the Russian government for the use of the fleet for saving the North. Well, now you go to your history books and try to find any reference to this, and you will not find it. Why? Why have we not been told about the role of Russia in our Civil War?
And what year did we actually buy Alaska, do you recall?
1867.
Okay, that's an interesting coincidence. And I interrupted you. You were going to give me all the other reasons why you believed that the Masons were involved with the assassination, having to do with the longitude and latitude. And you want to finish up that?
Yes, let's go now to Dealey Plaza. Dallas, Texas is also underneath, and they've already said this, underneath the 33rd degree northern latitude as well. Dallas, Texas, the Dealey Plaza, there's an obelisk there that John Kennedy drove within 15 feet of as his way towards the school book depository. I've seen this with my own eyes. That obelisk has a plaque on it commemorating the site of the first fraternal lodge in Texas. The state of Texas is a Masonic state. The state flag was designed by a Mason. The reason that this Texas was created independent was because Masons, all the men at the Alamo were Masons. Jim Bowie and Austin and Houston and Davy Crockett, all of those men were Masons. So now, they killed John Kent. They wanted him there at noon when the sun would be at its zenith, meaning right straight overhead, because the sun god is the god worshipped by the Masonic Lodge. But unfortunately, Kennedy's car was delayed as it was driving the streets because people would rush out in the street and he'd have to stop the car, or the drivers had to stop the car, or slow down at least. And so Kennedy didn't have a straight shot coming into Dealey Plaza, so he was late. I think he got there, 12:25 or 12:35 even.
Oh, I know. Of course, is this conjecture on your part, or is there any evidence that you have that they wanted him there at high noon? I mean, it's certainly it's an interesting theory, but do you have any documentation of that?
Well, just the fact that if it had been at high noon, they would have been able to have the greatest sacrifice. By the way, notice this: John Kennedy was the first Catholic president. So the Masons were able to avenge the death of Hiram Abiff. No, I'm sorry, of Jacques de Molay.
Now,
who was killed by the Catholic Church.
For our listeners, Jacques de Molay was the founder, was the head of the Knights Templar, which was the dominant economic force in Europe in the 1300s. And, of course, they were the central bankers at that time. They were really the first central bankers, the Knights Templar. They were a secret order that had gone to the Holy Land in the 1100s, supposedly to guard the Temple Mount and to help pilgrims who were going to see the holy sites there in Jerusalem. But they tapped into the mystery religions, and they actually became an occult order, and you'll find that in the writings of Manly P. Hall, specifically in his book, Lectures in Ancient Philosophy. And so the Knights Templar became a Luciferian organization, and they got tremendous power and tremendous wealth, and then of course it was discovered that they were Luciferian, and that's why Jacques de Molay was arrested on Friday the 13th of October 1307. That's why Friday the 13th is a bad or an evil omen. That's the origin of that belief. And Jacques de Molay then was burned at the stake by the French king, who along with the Catholic Pope presided over condemning Jacques de Molay to death. So what you're suggesting is the murder of John Fitzgerald Kennedy, the first Catholic president, was in retribution for the assassination or for the burning at the stake of Jacques de Molay?
Yes, I'm saying that exactly. Because in their own rituals, they take an oath to avenge the murder of Jacques de Molay. That's how significant it was to them. That is in their own literature, in their own rituals. I'm saying that is in part, that there were six groups involved in the assassination of John Kennedy. One, the Masons. Two, the Mafia, the CIA, the FBI, the Secret Service, the Dallas Police Department. Those groups were all directly involved. And the Masons were directly involved. And then, to guarantee that they were anonymous, the conspiracy made sure that Masons, in the main, were appointed to the Warren Commission.
Now, who were they? Certainly, we know that Earl Warren was a Mason, and was Richard Russell, Senator
Richard Russell,
Mason?
Was one, and so was Gerald Ford.
All right,
Gerald Ford, just a matter of days ago, at the age of 90, still insists that one single bullet Lee Harvey Oswald killed John Kennedy.
Well, I think that Gerald Ford was a Mason. He was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He was well rewarded for his treachery on the Warren Commission by becoming the President of the United States.
Yes.
And they really took very good care of all the people who were involved in that, of course, betrayal. There was a young man, he was the Assistant Counsel for Commission, for the Warren Commission. His name was Arlen Specter. Today is Senator Arlen Specter. So, you know, those who go along and betray the American people are well rewarded. In fact, what's so interesting is that when they were talking about the impeachment of Bill Clinton, there were a few senators who switched sides from the Republican side of the aisle to the Democrat side of the aisle and backed the Democrats, saying, "We are not going to impeach the president." One of them was Trent Lott, who was 33-degree Mason. Another was Arlen Specter, who was also a Mason.
Arlen Specter's single bullet theory is a physical impossibility, and he knows it. There is a picture in the Warren Commission. I've got a copy of it in the condensed form. It's called the Alton's photograph. And in the Alton's photograph, it was a picture taken from the other side of the street towards the school book depository at the time of the first shot. The car is coming towards the photographer. You can see its grill. It's at an angle, so you can see its grill, and you can see John Kennedy is already reaching for his neck, which means it was taken at the time of the first shot. And in the doorway of that building, of that picture, stands Lee Harvey Oswald in the doorway of the first floor. He's not on the sixth floor. He's on the first floor. There's no question it's him. I did a study of this on my in my video called The Kennedy Assassination, in which I show you the pictures of Lee Harvey Oswald after shortly after he was arrested. For about a dozen pictures, he was wearing the identical coat to the coat of the man in the doorway. There's no question about that's him. Well, now, why would they say it was him shooting on the sixth floor when he's in the first floor of the school book depository?
Well, we know that within a minute or a minute and a half of the shooting, the police had rushed into the first floor, and there was the Harvey Oswald sitting there drinking. I said the other day he was drinking a Coke, but somebody corrected me and said he always drank Pepsi. So whether it was a Coke or Pepsi, it really doesn't matter. It was he was there, and there's no question he was there. And the police said, "Who's this man?" They said, "Oh, he works upstairs." And, and there's no way he could have run down the stairs and gotten a Coke, you know, in a matter of a minute. And the tragedy is they've deceived the American people all this time. Why? Because the last thing they want the American people to know is that there was a conspiracy to kill President Kennedy. And this was a coup d'etat. And at that point, of course, the establishment took complete control of the American government. Has had to cover this up ever since. There are over 100 people affiliated with the knowing, with the assassination. In other words, they knew something about it. They witnessed it. The book is called The Dead Witnesses. Unfortunately, it's out of print. We carried it until recently when it went out of print. But it's an important book for people to read to understand that what happened was not accidental. It was intentional. And with the death of Kennedy, we had Lyndon Johnson come in, and the Great Society came in, and we went to war in Vietnam, and 58,000 American boys died for absolutely nothing. So pick up the story from there, Ralph.
Well, you're absolutely right. That John Kennedy was killed because of Vietnam. John Kennedy, when he found out about the war in Vietnam, issued orders to withdraw the troops, to withdraw the first 1,000. I have copies of those orders in my video. I show them to you. And 4 days after he issued the first letter, he was in Dallas. 4 days after the assassination, Lyndon Johnson rescinded those orders and put us back on a schedule for the Vietnamese War. The Vietnamese War was planned by our government in 1943 when we divided up Indochina into Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia, I believe it was. So we knew that. Our government hired Ho Chi Minh. Our government trained Ho Chi Minh. Our government turned over captured Japanese supplies that Japan was withdrawing from at the end of the war. We turned over those materials, the war-making technology that it needed, that Ho Chi Minh would need for to start a guerrilla war. Our government turned those over to him. I've got that documented.
Oh, we have actually a 2-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who, for our listeners out there, if you don't know who he was Colonel X, who sat on the park bench in Oliver Stone's movie with Jim Garrison. Of course, Jim Garrison was played by Kenneth Costner. The Colonel X was played by Donald Sutherland. But in real life, of course, that was Colonel Fletcher Prouty. And he tells us there, he was the person to know, he was the Pentagon liaison to the CIA. And he talks about how there were simply massive amounts of military hardware on Okinawa as the Second World War drew to an end. It had been put there in case we were going to have to do an invasion of Japan. So half of that war material was sent to Korea, and the other half was sent to our good friend Ho Chi Minh, so he could carry out his guerrilla warfare, and so we could have a war in Vietnam at some time in the future. These people are long-term planners. Now, that was in 1945, and it wasn't then until 1963, America got involved in that war. But they'd been planning that war. Why was it so important? Well, it was a wonderful distraction. And during Vietnam, of course, they changed America forever. The Supreme Court took God and prayer out of our schools. The Supreme Court found that women had a right to kill their unborn children. They changed the immigration laws so we could begin creating a multicultural society and bring massive numbers of Muslims in here who could then be trained, and at least a few of them could be trained in jihad against America. They changed the structure of our Constitution, began to take away states' rights and centralize all power with central authority and central government. And they financed it by simply borrowing money and, of course, beginning to spend the money in Social Security and Medicare. They put that in the central budget, and they used that money to finance the war so we could have both guns and butter, the best of both worlds, and as Flag Drake coffins returned with weeping widows and weeping mothers, why people weren't paying any attention to the fact we were losing our freedom here at home. Go ahead, Ralph.
There's a far more important reason for the Vietnamese War we haven't discussed yet. And that was, why did our government want a war in Vietnam? And until you put that part of the puzzle together, the whole Kennedy assassination, the whole war in Vietnam doesn't make sense.
All right, you tell me why you think they wanted a war in Vietnam.
I know why they did.
Oh, why?
Because drugs.
Well, that was certainly a part of it, but I don't...
No, it's the only reason, Doug. Let me try to explain. We are now building, as you know, we're building Red China into a war power. We're sending them technology they need to become a major player in world politics. And the American businessman is selling Red China this technology. And they don't want the yen because the yen is worthless. They want dollars. Now, how is Red China going to get dollars? They can't. They have nothing. We have nothing we want to buy from Red China. Pig's knuckles? What do we want?
Well, right? Ralph, go to Walmart. Go to Walmart, any store in this country, and they're loaded with all the things we're buying from Red China. Most of what we buy today is made in Red China today. Even the parts that are in American cars are made in Red China and shipped over here. But go ahead with the story.
It's insignificant compared to what I'm talking about. Let me finish. Red China only has one product that could generate enough money to match the amount of money that we're sending to Red China. And that is drugs. Red China is the government in Red China is producing the poppy from which opium and heroin are made. Now those poppy seeds, poppies, are sent to Khun Sa in Burma, and Khun Sa makes it into heroin. And then the heroin is picked up by Air America airplanes and brought to the United States. Now notice this, we have a war on drugs, we've had one for 50 years, or 40, whatever it's been. Notice this, the war on drugs does not interdict heroin, it interdicts cocaine. Why? It's very selective. We've shut down the Columbia connection, right? Because that's cocaine. We don't stop heroin. Now, why? Don't we know where it comes from? Of course we know. Our government's importing it for the CIA. Now, how do I know that? Bo Grice, as you know, has documented this case with an in-person interview of Khun Sa, who tells him the whole story. Our government buys the drugs through the CIA and the mafia. The mafia bring it back in Air America airplanes, and it's unloaded, and now heroin has become the drug of choice in this nation. That's the reason we fought the war in Vietnam. Now, we didn't have a drug culture until the Vietnamese War. Two things convinced the young people to turn to drugs. One was rock and roll music. That agency alone, by the pure number of it, convinced young people to turn to drugs.
Ralph, you're going to have to hold that because we're out of time for this hour, but we can continue this the next hour. This is the time when we, of course, want to say goodnight to our listeners up there in the Great Northwest. And if you'd like, of course, to get more information about what Ralph is talking about, we have a book, Drugging of America, our 4-tape set. Is there really a war on drugs? And you'll hear at least 6 different people tell you there's no war on drugs. It's all being brought in right into this country. Into the Buzzsaw has an article by Gary Webb, Pulitzer Prize winning author who can never get a job again. Why? Because he exposed the CIA drug connection. And you can go to Into the Wilderness website, or From the Wilderness, and get the connection to the CIA's own website where they admit, the GAO admits they were on drugs. Till tomorrow, may the Lord be with you. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And feel free to call in if you'd like to. Our guest this evening is our good friend Ralph Epperson. In just a moment or two, I'm going to let him get his telephone number out so people can get his material if they want to get it. And certainly they can get that free copy of his treatise on the book review of Morals and Dogma. But we were talking about the CIA and drugs, and I was commenting, you can go to the website From the Wilderness, from that website, there is a link to the CIA GAO, General Accounting Office, or Inspector General report on the CIA, where they admit that the CIA was involved in drug smuggling. But, of course, the average American has never heard that. We do have a wonderful four-tape set with actually 6 different interviews with people involved in the CIA drug smuggling. We have the book Drugging America by Rodney Stitch. And then we have the book Into the Buzzsaw. It's 18 essays by award-winning, Pulitzer Prize award-winning writers and Emmy-winning television producers who made one mistake, each one of them. They tried to tell the truth. And in the article by Gary Webb, who won the Pulitzer Prize when he was at the San Jose Mercury, he tells what happened when he tried to expose the CIA drug connection here in the United States. He could never get another job again, but there's no question the CIA was involved in drugs. And based upon what Gary Webb wrote, there was an inspector general inspection of the CIA, and they admitted that the CIA was involved with smuggling drugs into America, and there is no question that they've been involved for many years. We carry one other book, which I think is so important. It's called Double Cross. It is written by Chuck Giancano, who is the brother of Sam Giancano, who for so many years headed the American mafia. He was the Don. He was the godfather of the mafia here in the United States. And in this book, written by Sam Giancano's brother, why, you'll find the relationship between the CIA and the mafia. And the mafia, of course, carried out the assassinations for the CIA. The CIA helped the mafia, get their drugs, sold the drugs to the mafia, let them distribute it. The CIA brought them in. The mafia distributed them. And, of course, that was a very nice relationship until the church committee subpoenaed Sam Giancana to appear before the Senate to talk about the relationship between the mafia and the CIA. And just about 10 days before Sam Giancana was scheduled to appear, what do you think happened to him? Why, he was double-crossed by his friends, and Sam Giancana himself was assassinated. And is well, I won't describe what happened to him, but there was no question that the message was, you're never to talk at all about what's going on. So the tragedy is the American people don't know these things. We have the books, we have the documentation, and the reason people don't understand it is because we have Rush Limbaugh, Bill O'Reilly, Dan Rather, and Tom Brokaw, who receive tremendous salaries not to reveal what's going on, but to conceal it from the American people. Well, I guess this evening is Ralph Epperson. He's been talking about his view of the real reason for Vietnam, and he thinks it was entirely about drugs. And certainly I respect Ralph. I don't always agree with him, but I respect his views. I think drugs was part of it. But anyway, go ahead, tell your story, Ralph.
Just to finish, though, the government made sure that Lyndon Johnson would continue the policy of the drug, the war, as soon as he got into office. And as we know, I think you admitted, his mistress came out with the statement that she was told that, I believe it was the morning that Johnson landed in Fort Worth. I think they met. And she was told by him that as of that day, they wouldn't have the Kennedys to worry about anymore. So Lyndon knew about the assassination, and he had to know, because they had to know, they had to make sure that he would continue the war. The Gulf of Tonkin incident that got us involved in the war never happened. That event never happened. It was a phony, and even the people involved have now admitted it. So we got into a war with a fallacious argument that the North Vietnamese gunboats had attacked two of our destroyers out in the sea, the open ocean, and that never happened. So this whole thing about drugs, about the war, is as phony as a $1 bill. Now let me tell you this. This is also very revealing.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.